What about the guy in the ocean?
He got the blueprints from the guy he was blackmailing, piece by piece, over a long period of time. We were watching him. We knew exactly what he was doing. He was aiming to sell them to Iraqi intelligence. The Iraqis wanted to level the playing field for the next time around. The U.S. Army didn't want that to happen. Elliot stared at me.
So they had the guy killed?
I shook my head. We sent a couple of MPs down to arrest him. Standard operating procedure, all legal and above board, believe me. But it went wrong. He got away. He was going to disappear. The U.S. Army really didn't want that to happen.
So then they had him killed?
I looked up at the sky again, didn't answer.
That wasn't standard procedure, Elliot said, was it?
I said nothing.
It was off the books, wasn't it?
I didn't answer.
But he didn't die. What was his name?
Duffy said. Quinn. Turned out to be the single worst guy I ever met.
And you saw him in Beck's car on Saturday?
I nodded. He was being chauffeured away from Symphony Hall. I gave them all the details I had. But as I talked, we all knew the information was useless. It was inconceivable that Quinn would be using his previous identity. So all I had to offer was a physical description of a plain-looking white man, about 50 years old, with two 22 GSW scars on his forehead. Better than nothing, but it didn't really get them anywhere.
Why didn't his prints match? Elliot asked.
He was erased, like he never existed.
Why didn't he die?
Silenced 22, our standard issue weapon for covert close work, but not a very powerful weapon.
Is he still dangerous?
Not to the Army. He's ancient history. This all was 10 years ago. The APF SDS will be in the museum soon. So will the Abrams tank.
So why try to trace him?
Because depending on exactly what he remembers, he could be dangerous to the guy who went to take him out. Elliot nodded, said nothing.
Did he look important? Duffy asked. On Saturday? In Beck's car?
He looked wealthy. Expensive cashmere overcoat, leather gloves, silk scarf. He looked like a guy who was accustomed to being chauffeured around. He just jumped right in, like he did it all the time.
Did he greet the driver?
I don't know.
We need to place him. We need context. How did he act? He was using Beck's car, but did he look entitled or like somebody was doing him a favor?
He looked entitled, like he uses it every day of the week.
So is he Beck's equal?
I shrugged. He could be Beck's boss.
Partner at best, Elliot said. RLA guy wouldn't travel to meet with an underling.
I don't see Quinn as somebody's partner.
What was he like?
Normal, for an intelligence officer, in most ways.
Except for the espionage.
Yes, except for that.
And whatever got him killed, off the books.
That too. Duffy had gone quiet. She was thinking hard. I was pretty sure she was thinking of ways she could use me, and I didn't mind at all.
Will you stay in Boston? She asked. Where we can find you?
I said I would, and they left, and that was the end of day 5. I found a scalper in a sports bar and spent most of days 6 and 7 at Fenway Park watching the Red Sox struggling through an early season homestand. The Friday game went 17 innings and ended very late. So I slept most of day 8 and then went back to Symphony Hall at night to watch the crowd. Maybe Quinn had season tickets to a concert series. But he didn't show. I replayed in my mind the way he had glanced at me. It might have been just that rueful, crowded sidewalk thing, but it might have been more. Susan Duffy called me again on the morning of day 9, Sunday. She sounded different. She sounded like a person who had done a lot more thinking. She sounded like a person with a plan.
Hotel lobby at noon.
She showed up in a car, alone. The car was a Taurus, built down to a very plain specification. It was grimy inside. A government vehicle. She was wearing faded denim jeans with good shoes and a battered leather jacket. Her hair was newly washed and combed back from her forehead. I got in on the passenger side, and she crossed six lanes of traffic and drove straight into the mouth of a tunnel that led to the Mass Pike.
"Zachary Beck has a son," she said.
She took an underground curve, fast, and the tunnel ended, and we came out into the weak midday April light right behind Fenway.
"He's a college junior. Some small, no-account liberal arts place, not too far from here, as it happens. We talked to a classmate in exchange for burying a cannabis problem. The son is called Richard Beck. Not a popular person. A little strange. Seems very traumatized by something that happened about 5 years ago."
"What kind of something?"
"He was kidnapped."
I said nothing.
"You see," Duffy said, "you know how often regular people get kidnapped these days?"
"No."
"Doesn't happen. It's an extinct crime. So it must have been a turf war thing. It's practically proof his dad's a racketeer."
"Well, that's a stretch."
"Okay, but it's very persuasive. And it was never reported. FBI has no record of it. Whatever happened was handled privately, and not very well. The classmate says Richard Beck is missing an ear."
"So?" She didn't answer. She just drove west. I stretched out on the passenger seat and watched her out of the corner of my eye. She looked good. She was long and lean and pretty, and she had life in her eyes. She was wearing no makeup. She was one of those women who absolutely didn't need to. I was very happy to let her drive me around. But she wasn't just driving me around. She was taking me somewhere, that was clear. She had come with a plan.
"I studied your whole service record, in great detail. You're an impressive guy."
"Not really."
"And you've, got big feet." "That's good, too."
"Why?"
"You'll see."
"Tell me."
"We're very alike, you and me. We have something in common. I want to get close to Zachary Beck to get my agent back. You want to get close to him to find Quinn."
"Your agent is dead. 8 weeks now? It would be a miracle. You should face it." She said nothing. "And I don't care about Quinn." She glanced right and shook her head.
"Oh, you do. You really do. I can see that from here. It's eating you up. He's unfinished business. And my guess is you're the sort of guy who hates unfinished business."